You know
you
esto.
This.
Hello, hello. This is WBCA 102.9 FM Boston, Boston's community radio station. This is Did You Know You Missed This with MassArt Radio. My name is Eddie. I'm your host for today. Sitting with me is Elias, my co-host. Say hi.
Hi.
And in the other room over there is my good friends Richie and Kevin. Hi. Say hi.
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 And today we have a really, really awesome show. We're going to talk about some really cool stuff. And for my segment, I'm going to be talking about a little movie called Cursed that came out in 2005, but was in production hell for a bit longer than that. And I have a little 5-minute clip explaining the cursed history behind it. Oh, I already say that in the clip, so I just ruined the joke, but whatever.
Hello, it's me, Eddie. You're listening to Did You Know You Missed This? And today I'm going to be talking about the Cursed production of Cursed 2005. First, I want to give a shout out to Jane Mulcahy on YouTube for making a video explaining the movie's history, because for a while, the history of this movie was a curiosity of mine, and her video on it gave so much information about the creation of this movie that I thought that I would never know. So, first of all, the script was written by Kevin Williamson, who wrote Scream, and it was directed by Wes Craven, who also directed Scream, but he was pressured into directing this project. He didn't originally want to do it. Rick Baker, who made the special effects in American Werewolf in London, worked on the werewolf effects, and he was also pressured into doing it, and the script underwent a bunch of changes as the production went on. So the original concept by Williamson was about a dancer who had werewolf genes who was attacked by a serial killer who then also got infected. But as more people were added to the project, this was changed into a story about three strangers who became connected because of a werewolf attack. Skeet Ulrich, who's also from Scream, was connected to the project originally, as well as Christina Ricci and Jesse Eisenberg, as well as a bunch of other actors. After reshoots, it was changed yet again, and Skeet Ulrich was unavailable. So in the new version, which is the version that got released, Christina Ricci and Jesse Eisenberg no longer play strangers, but are now playing siblings. And a version of the original script before reshoots exists, and you can read it online, apparently. I haven't read it yet, but I learned that from watching the video. And so this movie was filmed in 2003, but underwent so much production stuff that it ended up being released in 2005. And Rick Baker, who, again, worked on the special effects in American Werewolf in London, he was fired and a new effects company was hired. But Rick Baker was still credited in the movies for the new effects, even though he didn't actually work on the stuff that was in the released film. Many scenes also ended up having CGI instead of practical effects, even though a large marketing part of this movie was the fact that it had practical werewolf effects. And also, the writer, Kevin Williamson, left after the third reshoot. And there ended up being 4 reshoots for this movie. Before I really knew anything about what was going on behind the scenes of this movie, all I knew was from an interview with Jesse Eisenberg where he mentioned that there were 4 reshoots, and during the last one, the crew made shirts that said, Cursed 4, Back for More. And I always thought that was really funny, and I always wanted to know more about what was going on since there were 4 reshoots and the final product itself seemed very, like, confused in what it wanted to be. So I was very, very happy seeing the video by Jane Mulcahy that explained so much of what was going on behind the scenes. So again, thank you, thank you, thank you so much for making that video. Anyway, after all those reshoots, the movie had to be recut again to get a PG-13 rating. The movie ended up not being scary at all because they took out all of the horror, which was making it an R-rated movie. So there were no scares, only jump scares and fake outs. And in the end, the movie barely made back a quarter of its budget. After hearing all of that, you might be wondering, why are you recommending me this movie? This sounds crazy. This sounds horrible. This movie is hilarious, and you would understand if you got to see it. Like, yes, it does fail at being a horror movie, but it succeeds in being a comedy. There are so many scenes in that movie that my friends and I quote constantly, and no one knows what we're talking about because no one's really seen this movie, but it is so funny. And I'll talk about that more with my co-hosts, but for this part, I just wanted to have a pre-recorded thing so I didn't go on a crazy long tangent about the creation and production of this movie, because that story is wild. And if you want to learn more, Jane Mulcahy's video on it, if you feel like it, because it is so detailed and I learned so much that I didn't think that I was ever going to learn. I didn't know so much of this information was public. So yeah, Curse 2005 may not be a good movie, but it's a funny one. And for that reason, I rate it 5 stars. And also because I really like Jesse Eisenberg.
5 stars on your Letterboxd?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
So, yeah, Curse 2005 is a very interesting movie that not a lot of people have seen, and a lot of people who have seen it don't like it, and for a good reason, but I like it, so I wanted to talk about it.
It sounds like a ship of Theseus of sorts.
What do you mean by that?
Just, like, all of the people who are, like, they did things, and then, like, those things were taken out, but they're still credited, and so it's like...
Oh, yeah.
Is it even the same movie?
No, yeah. There were so many reshoots and rewrites, and I was honestly, like, really, really happy when I got to, like, see some of that information, like, actually be shown, because I vaguely was aware of it, but I wasn't sure that there was any public information about it, because all I had, like, I had done my research. I was, like, searching for it far and wide, but apparently not enough. And, yeah, the only thing that gave me that much information was from that interview where Jesse Eisenberg said there were 4 reshoots and they got T-shirts. I actually talked about this the first time I was ever on the radio. I don't think it was here. Eric remembers this, right? But I forget what radio station that was. But anyway, does anyone have any questions about the movie that I'm talking about?
Yeah, so could we get a little bit of a plot summary? What happens in this movie without, like, any spoilers, of course?
So the final product of the movie ended up being about 2 siblings who are orphans, who one of them is Christina Ricci, who's the adult, and the other one is Jesse Eisenberg, who's the teenager, who's in high school. And they are just, like... walking around at night. I kind of forget because it's like, this movie is not great. But they get attacked by a werewolf and they start showing like werewolf signs. Like
they start turning?
They start turning.
Whoa.
But it's like they have like us like a pentagram on their hand because they're cursed. They start seeming more attractive to other people. They start smelling blood and they're like, oh, that looks good. They like start eating raw steak and their dog starts being like growling at them and stuff. It's like, it's really silly because it's a non-scary horror movie. The part that I found the funniest that I, like, talked about earlier but then was like, I don't want to spoil it, was so the character that Jesse Eisenberg plays, who's the high schooler, he is, in the beginning of the movie, being bullied by this, like, you know, early 2000s, like, homophobic bully, and he's mm-hmm. always, like, being told, like, oh, you're gay because he's a nerd. And then at some point, because he starts to gain more confidence because he's becoming a werewolf, so he starts talking back. Mm-hmm. His bully's like, oh, yeah, have you seen all the stuff about the wrestling team? Are you going to sign up for the wrestling team, you know, because you're gay? And Jimmy, the nerd, is like, you are the captain of the wrestling team. Like, why are you asking me to wrestle you? Like, you're weird. Like, you're into me. And he's like, no. And then they wrestle. He does show up to the wrestling team tryouts. And he says this really iconic line as he, like, suplexes or whatever. I don't know proper wrestling terms. He goes, you know, the best part about being a fairy is that you get to fly. And he's like, he's crazy. He's doing, like, backflips all over the place.
Oh.
And then after that, his bully, like, comes to his house and is like, yo, how did you know?
Oh, yeah, how did you know I was gay?
How did you know? Like, I like you. Like,
oh.
I heard people talking about this movie. I do know that line.
No, it's iconic and no one knows about it. It's the funniest thing ever. Like, my friends and I, like, occasionally, like, you know the best part about being a fairy? It's so good. But, yeah, no one has seen it. And also the bully character, I only know him from Cursed, but apparently he's also in Gilmore Girls. He's, like, he's the main love interest guy. I think, is this, like, Jesse or something? What is that?
I don't know.
But, yeah, like... I definitely called him the wrong name because I have not watched Gilmore Girls. I'm sorry to the Gilmore Girls fans who are not listening right now.
I'm sorry, Gilmore Girls fans. We've never seen Gilmore Girls.
But no, it's the funniest non-scary horror movie ever.
I mean, it sounds like, and because you're wearing the shirt to the concert, reanimator kind of movie where they're trying to do horror, but it's just funny.
I don't know. I feel like Reanimator definitely was trying to be funny, and they succeeded in funny. And the effects in Reanimator were successful. But with Cursed, because they cut out so much of the good stuff, it's just like there's a werewolf transformation scene, and you know that they wanted the werewolf transformation scene to be good, you know, because they hired the American Werewolf in London guy. Mm-hmm. But now it's just like weird CGI, and it's not scary at all. It just looks funny.
Yeah.
And yeah. No, it's the craziest thing. Also, I didn't say the names of the people that were pressuring the other, like, movie people into doing stuff and then cutting stuff up. But that was the Weinsteins. They're
the Weinsteins.
Horrible for
Where have I heard that from? The Weinsteins.
You've definitely heard it because they've been in a lot of scandals on the news for good reason.
I feel like I've definitely heard that name around.
But, yeah, they completely destroyed the movie. They destroyed lives. No, yeah, the history behind this movie is really fascinating, and I'm really glad that people were able to, like, put it all together so you can, like, hear the whole story, because personally, I found it, like, super, super interesting. Mm-hmm. Even though the movie itself is, like, just kind of, like, silly, kind of, like, eh, just hearing about the whole thing puts the whole thing in context, and it's really, really fun. That's all I had to say, really, so... Just move on to the next thing.
All right.
Sure.
Once again, you're listening to Did You Know You Missed This on Mass Art Radio, WBCA LP 102.9 FM Boston, Boston's community radio station.
And we are also online at massartradio.com if you guys do want to check that out.
All right.
When you can listen to
Mass Art Radio,
the best station around.
I love Mass Art Radio. Best station, yes.
You know, I keep going to all these different raves, and people come up to me and they expect me to know what I'm doing. When in reality, I don't even know what I'm doing here. So they expect me to know what plur is. I don't know what plur is. Do you know what plur is? Can somebody here explain to me what the heck is plur?
I know what plur is. P stands for peace. L stands for love. U stands for unity. And R stands for respect.
Wow! Thanks, God!
And we're back.
Wow, I can't believe, you know, the voice of God spoke to us.
That was awesome. That was amazing.
Yeah, what a pleasure.
Yeah, you know, I met God, and she was a woman.
Wow.
Anyways, moving on from that, plur, raves, who loves raving? I love raving. I actually DJed at my first ever, like, DJ gig last night. For a rave, and it was so baller. And that kind of ties into what I'm going to be talking about today. Let's bring back the rave. Let's return the rave. SpongeBob SquareWave is actually such a cool, you know, happy hardcore artist. You know, it's a type of like EDM micro genre that's seen in a lot of raves. I love this guy's music so much. They're off of Off Me Nut Records, which is a digital record label in Sheffield, England. I think more people should be listening to this crazy music. So I'm going to lead into the song that I'm going to be playing. It is called Free L-Town. And it is the last song off the album Return of the Rave by SpongeBob SquareWave. And I hope you guys do enjoy, because I certainly do.
Where is it?
It's in the...
Wait, no, I found it.
Oh.
Sorry.
You're good.
All right, back to the show.
It may be quite simple, but now that it's done, I hope you don't mind, I hope you don't mind that I put down the words. How wonderful life is while you're in the world. Peanut butter, jam, peanut butter, jam, peanut butter, jam, peanut butter, 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 pean
And we're back.
Welcome back. You are listening to Mass Art Radio. We are on WBCA 102.9 FM Boston, Boston's community radio station. And that was a song by SpongeBob SquareWave, Free L-Town. Wow. Gosh, I love that song. So fast, so happy, so hardcore. One thing I do love about this artist is that he samples a lot of like newer songs, which is something that a lot of happy hardcore and rave music does, is sampling songs from its time and like using that, speeding them up and using them in the songs. Most happy hardcore that people listen to like during raves were from like the 90s, 80s, 90s, coming out of Europe. And so it was a lot of like older samples, but like in Return of the Rave, he samples so many like newer like meme-y songs.
Yeah.
It's so awesome. The entire album is amazing. Last year he released a different album like called Hands in the Air, which you can only listen to on Bandcamp right now. I'm pretty sure it's not on Spotify yet. But also just a great, you know, meme-y, super crazy album. Or that one was an EP, but super crazy.
Yeah, I was going to ask, because like while listening to that, obviously hearing like the peanut butter jelly type sample kind of made me crack up. And I was wondering, like, yeah, how has sort of that internet meme culture like impacted sort of this newer wave of like rave music?
It definitely has impacted it in like a huge way. People are using a ton of like different memes and song samples in their music that really just like, I don't know, make it in our age. I feel like with the creation of digital record labels as well, with the creation of digital record labels as well, people have really like done their stuff like online. And for those who don't know, a meme is like a popular like internet like image, video, song.
Wait. People... I actually know like the definition.
Oh, you
of
know
this
the
word.
Definition?
Well, I mean, kind of. It came into popularity recently, but the word meme means like a joke or a phrase passed down. So to an extent, an idiom like two birds, one stone could be considered a meme. But
oh, I didn't know that.
It recently became like very, very, very much a thing that the internet does, and you can actually have a major in memetics.
Wait,
at a
actually?
College. Yes, you literally can. You
That's
can look
so
into that.
Sick.
Can Mass Art get on that? I need that. Well, I'm gonna wrap it up here with my segment, but thank you guys for listening to my crazy rave music. I know it's not for everyone, but it's definitely for a select portion of people, and that portion of people does include me.
I liked it. That was really fun.
Yeah.
Want to listen to some tunes?
You're listening to Mass Art Radio.
I'm bored and I don't want to eat anything. What should I eat? I know. I'll eat some soap. Stop right there.
Stop right there. I'm the soap cop. I can't let you eat that soap.
But why?
Because it's really bad for you, and it's full of dangerous secrets.
Oh, okay. Hey guys, it's me, the soap cowboy. Remember, you can't eat soap because it's bad for you, and it's full of dangerous secrets. This sucks. I don't care about this PSA at all.
Okay. And we're back.
I'm like in tears, dude.
I really needed that. I was going to go out for some soap after this.
Yeah, me too.
Now I know better. Because all those secrets.
Thank God for that soap cop, man.
So basically, just like, I don't want to go too much into your time, Richie, but what happened with that was it was like an hour to the deadline, and I just sat down in my bed and put the phone on my stomach and started recording. And when I said dangerous secrets, I forgot the word chemical.
Oh my God.
So I make it seem like it has like some sort of forbidden knowledge. You drink soap.
Well, it all worked out.
It all worked out. Yes.
Well, speaking of forbidden knowledge,
ooh, segue.
Did you know you missed the band J-Jams? Referred to as an indie supergroup, which is a hilarious phrase to me. J-Jams was originally formed by James Valentine of Maroon 5, Jason Bosell of Rilo Kiley and Bright Eyes, Alex Greenwald of Phantom Planet, Michael Runyon, who was a solo artist, and Z Berg of the band The Like.
Hey, Richie, I don't know if they did this on purpose, but their first names make up the name of the band.
Yeah, it was totally coincidental, actually.
Yeah. Okay.
No, it was on purpose. And they all were like really longtime friends, part of kind of the California, got my C locations mixed up. California, like, indie rock kind of pop scene, and they all, like, did karaoke, but one night they couldn't get on the list for karaoke, and so they just went back to James Valentine's house and just started recording songs together. And that happened in, like, 2009, and then all their bands, like, were touring for so long, and then eventually, like, at some point they had all broken up or, like, gone on hiatus, and so they just decided to get together and, like, finally do, like, produce all the songs and released it on an album in 2012 called Suicide Pact, including the song Never Enough, once again by the band J-Jams, which you will hear now.
I like that.
So it's this like full album of like quintessential California indie pop.
It really does like have that vibe.
It's amazing. It's a really good like summertime album, in my opinion. That's kind of when I got into them. And I think that really helped with how much I love them. So they eventually like tour on that album and then start getting, even though like they started this band like for fun, they start getting all of these like tensions that come with touring and come with this like expectation of like preparing to make more music. And so they all kind of like freak out. James Valentine leaves the band to go like commit to Maroon 5. And then Z Berg, the singer, like considers moving to Nashville and becoming a country singer. And so Alex Greenwald like locks himself in his house with an outdated version of GarageBand and starts making synth music and then presents this whole album worth of synth instrumentals to Jason, Michael, and Z, and it's just like, let's make another album and just like have fun. So they all lock themselves in his house and start writing lyrics to it while like projecting Tron silently on the wall. So they end up with this weird synth pop like this song that I'll play a clip from, called I'm in Love with My Life off the album For Life by now known as Phases, because they changed their name.
They could have just removed one of the J's.
They really, really could have. So, like, you end up with this complete, like, utter vibe change.
Oh, yeah. Like, and also the synths and stuff really, like, sorry to interrupt, but.
Oh, no, go for it. Mr. Really, synth over here.
Oh, Mr. Synth. it really, like, makes the sound a lot fuller. That's something I've really noticed, like, in comparison to the two songs that you played, is the sound so much fuller.
Yeah, and I think, like, you can definitely tell that live, because I've done my fair share of looking at like old YouTube videos of them. And so like even though their first album, like as jams, like they have more members and like everyone's playing an instrument and everything, it is just such like more of a like complete vibe during Phases because like the synths and everything kind of round everything out in this really interesting way. And I think, and I'm pretty biased because I love Jason Bosell, because I love Rilo Kiley and Bright Eyes and like his work as a drummer. I think him like on this like drum machine instead is like amazing.
Yeah. I love drum machines more than acoustic drums half the time. And I'm a drummer, so I do play a little bit of the acoustic drums. But the drum machine, do you know what machine they're using?
No clue.
Okay. That's okay. But yeah, it just sounds so much fuller. There's such a different vibe. And it definitely sounds like they're, I don't know, more, in like into the music, you know?
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think that that comes from the fact that like J-Jams is honestly really similar to all the music that they were making in their main bands, where like the reason that they wanted to make music with each other was to get away from problems in their main bands. Mm-hmm. So with Phases, having it all be this like electronic, like synth stuff, completely different from anything that they had done before, it really just like lets them have more fun with it and seem happier. Mm-hmm. So yeah, both albums, incredible though. So highly recommend both J-Jams Suicide Pact and Phases For Life.
Hello. It is me again. You are still listening to Bessart Radio. I just love Bessart Radio. I just love Bessart Radio.
All right. It's actually really weird that you brought up synths, because the band I'm about to talk about is entirely synths.
It all comes together.
But before we start on that, you're listening to Mass Art Radio. We are on WBCA LP 102.9 FM Boston, Boston's community radio station. I almost nailed it. I almost nailed it.
You were so close.
Anyways, I'm going to play.
And Mass Art Radio is online, massartradio.com.
Oh my gosh.
So I was actually very far from nailing it.
No, that's okay.
It's okay. You got all of us to help you. So.
It's okay. We make the dream work as a team work.
It's a group effort.
All right. I'm going to play a song behind me while I talk about this.
All right.
In the background so you can get a vibe of it, but I'm going to leave it up and then turn it down a bit.
And what song is this?
This is Cosmic Surfin' by YMO.
YMO standing for Yellow Magic Orchestra, in case you don't know. Very influential band.
Very, very, very. I'm about to talk about that right now. Sorry. Basically, the deal with these guys is if you've ever played a game like Mario, Zelda, Animal Crossing, I think Phoenix Wright counts?
Yeah, Phoenix Wright counts.
I mean, if you're a musician, you like to listen closely, you'll probably think, I wonder what inspires this music. Chances are you're listening to something that was at least somewhat inspired by the band Yellow Magic Orchestra, which they were this band of three guys from Japan in 1978, at least they started then. And that's when they released their freshman self-titled album that kind of cemented synth music as something that could be effectively used, just very flexibly. Because at the time, you had stuff like Wendy Carlos had switched on Bach, which proved that they could be used to make music.
Mm-hmm.
Bands like Pink Floyd were using synths as a sort of co-pilot to their rock music. We had bands like Kraftwerk who were proving it could make something very industrial and fun and beepy sounding. But these guys, as you can hear, let me just turn it up a little bit. They're like proving that it can be weird and fun and bouncy, which you didn't really expect machines to be able to do something like this back then.
Yeah, I mean, it was a new technology. People didn't know what they were doing.
It really was. It really, you know, really was.
Yeah, like the Beatles, who kind of like introduced the general public to synth music as an art form. Like, their synth machine was broken when they were making that album. They didn't know what they were doing.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and a couple of the songs, there's like this weird like meow sound, and like it's because their machine was broken and they didn't know what they were doing at all and how to work the hardware because it was new.
Yeah, so like basically, I'll go over the band members. We have Ryuichi Sakamoto, Yukihiro Takahashi, and Haruomi Hosono. Sadly, the first two passed away recently. They passed away in January and March of last year. And a fun fact about the one remaining guy, Haruomi, his dad was the only Japanese man on the Titanic.
Whoa.
And he survived and then had this guy.
Wow.
I know. It's weird. That was just a fun fact. That has nothing to do with the band.
It's so weird that all this stuff is connected.
I know, right? But basically, if you're ever listening to something like, I'd say Blinding Lights by The Weeknd, and you hear the synths in the background, these guys are probably very, very, very much the reason that that's like regularly recognized as something you can do in music. Mm. So I'm just going to give you some examples right here. I'm going to take a clip from their song Simoon. I want you to listen to this melody.
No way. No way.
No, give me a moment. I haven't gotten to the thesis yet. And then I want you to listen to this this clip of the music from the 9 a.m. hour in the original Animal Crossing. You can hear it, right?
Oh, my God.
Is that called a light motif?
Yeah.
I think.
They're using the same motif.
But I don't know. Actually, I don't know if that counts because I forget. Does that count if it's like in the same piece? In the same
set of music?
That counts
if it's in like the same like set of music as like a leitmotif. Where,
okay.
But they've definitely ripped that motif and used it.
No, they certainly have. And this is another one I want to play. It's the song 1,000 Knives. This is actually a cover of a song originally made by one of the band members, Ryuichi. It was his like first ever published song as a solo artist. And they remixed it in one of their later albums. Here's a clip of that remix. And then again, I'm going to play the trial music from Ace Attorney.
It's the same vamp.
You can hear it. You can hear the inputs. And I'm going to cut this one short. And then I'm going to play the lava level music from New Super Mario Bros. For the DS. Again, you can hear it. It's like, it's palpable.
Oh my God.
Yeah, right? You can hear the music. Oh, well, that one cut out early. My bad. But, but yeah, I just like, I wanted to bring these guys up because 9 times out of 10 when, well, not 9 times out of 10, I'm exaggerating. I just like to, I like to hype my own stuff up. But usually I've seen a lot of musicians or music critics or people who study music get asked, who do you think people should listen to more but don't? And YMO is usually the go-to band. They're like the standard underrated band. They're the most overrated underrated band.
Yeah, I feel like it depends on the circle you're in because, I mean, me and Elias, I mean, all of us, we're big music nerds, so I've heard of YMO so much, and they're definitely overrated in certain scenes. But if you talk to, like, the average layman, they're not going to know what YMO is, but they're going to hear influence of it in all their music.
No, yeah, that's, like, the thing about, like, being sort of in an echo chamber of, like, people who are like, oh, yeah, everyone knows this. And then you talk about it to another person who doesn't, and it's like you're speaking a completely different language.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I almost swore. I almost swore.
It's okay. It's okay.
Greg,
we can cut
that out. I have a potty mouth. I'm so sorry.
This guy has a potty mouth, guys.
I do. I've actually been trying very hard not to swear these past 3 sessions.
Yeah, we made it so far. We're in, like, our last...
We almost did it.
Yeah, this is our last show before our hiatus, guys.
Oh, it is.
We're going to go straight to Mass Art, and we're just going to be broadcasting from there.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm so sorry for swearing. I'm so sorry.
You didn't even finish the swear. I know. You don't have to apologize that much.
You can still
censor yourself.
I feel so bad. I don't want to break any rules. But, yeah, basically, I've been obsessed with this band since I first heard about them. Weirdly enough, you can probably go and find this. Back when a bunch of YouTube videos got crushed by Nintendo because they didn't like that their songs were on YouTube, because they're very, very touchy about their legal stuff and their properties.
Nintendo.
There was a few videos that were just popping back up because people don't care, of course. They would repost the soundtracks again. And underneath 9 a.m. Animal Crossing... It had been posted last week, and I was listening to it because I love that song. And someone in the comments was just said straight up, nothing else. Yellow Magic Orchestra, Simon, just the song. And they didn't say anything else. And I said, okay, well, I wonder what that's all about. So I listened to it, and I hear the melody, and then I listen to the whole album, and that is actually what got me into them.
I don't know if this is actually true. This is just going off of, like, my mind. But I did recognize the melody, but when you played the original Animal Crossing song, I'm like, that's not what I know it from. So I think that they continued to use that in newer games, possibly.
They did.
They probably did, yeah. Yeah, no, it's I think studying video game music is one of my favorite things ever.
Me too.
Especially with a company like Nintendo that's very hush-hush. They used to have a thing called Iwata Asks, where one of the big guys at the top would interview the people, but he passed away and he stopped doing that. But they won't go into detail about their inspirations. Usually when you talk to someone about why they make something, they'll say, oh, I make it for this reason, or I was influenced by this artist. And you don't get that with Nintendo, so you kind of got to, like, sniff for it.
Yeah, they're super hush-hush. People have to... I watch a lot of these types of videos and research video game music as well. And people have to really dig and find these references and inspirations because it's not knowledge for the public because they keep it so, you know, under wraps.
Until you bring it onto our lovely radio program and let everyone know what they missed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. Sadly, we're going to have to cut it there. But... basically, you have been listening to... Wait, actually, does anybody... Before I cut us out, do you want to give any final goodbyes or final says before we leave radio forever and disappear?
Well, it's not forever.
Not forever.
It might be forever. What if no one ever hears from us again and we disappear and they find us in, like, a cave 20 years later?
No!
I'll still be making radio in that cave.
Yeah, exactly.
Can we make that happen? Exactly. Can we, like, set up our new radio station in the cave?
Of course. It'll be the Radio Cave.
Exactly.
That would be a good name for our next station, the Radio Cave.
Mm. That's cute. I like that.
Anyway, this has been Did You Know You Missed This? Signing off for the last time on this station. This is Eddie.
This is Elias.
This is Kevin.
This is Richie.
And See you next time, whenever that is.
Bye-bye.
And thank you for listening on WBCA LP 102.9 FM Boston, Boston's community radio station.
You got it right that time.
And our wonderful, gracious home for these episodes.
Thank you, guys.
And don't forget our website, massartradio.com.
All right. I'm going to miss this. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye.